Welcome to the Sport Passion Podcast. And here is your host, Lars Marendorf.
Okay, so I'm sitting in the Nokia Arena in Tampere, Finland, and I'm joined by Jesse Montaño from the DNVR Avalanche. Jesse, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Can't tell you how much I appreciate you having me. We were just saying, it's always a pleasure to get to do this kind of stuff. So seriously, thank you very much for having me on here.
It's my pleasure, and you're a first-time guest, so I usually ask first-time guests how they got into hockey, how they got into covering hockey. So could you just give my audience a short overview about your history and about what you're doing with the DNVR Avalanche?
Yeah. I apologize in advance. Being brief has never been my forte. So my family moved to Colorado in 1994, late 1994. The Avalanche moved there in 1995.
Good time to move there.
Good timing, yes. And we moved from somewhere that had no pro sports. So, you know, we a couple college teams and stuff like that, but no pro sports. So when we first got to Colorado, my parents really just, you know, fell in love with the sense of community and all that stuff that the, you know, pro teams in Denver and all that stuff had. And then, to your point, the Avs go on to win the Stanley Cup, you know, a year later, and we just kind of got swept up in all of it. And I was a young kid and just kind of fell in love with the sport and how fast it moved and the players and all that stuff. And just from there, I remember before I got my first hockey stick, I'd use my mom's vacuum attachments to like as makeshift hockey sticks and just smack stuff around the house. So I just really fell in love, you know, cliche, but I just really fell in love with the game really young. And it just kind of snowballed from there. So that was how I got into the sport. And then it was actually my first memory of like wanting to be in covering hockey, journalism, that kind of stuff. The 2001 run to the Stanley Cup for the Avs. The Denver Broncos run the sports scene in Colorado. And the Avs had just knocked out the Blues to advance to the Stanley Cup final. And the front page of the sports section was about something a Bronco player was doing in the offseason. I said, I want coverage of this team. I want to know what's going on. I want to hear about the players and things like that. And so that was the first time I remember like having that kind of like spark in me of, you know, I want to tell some of these stories. And then honestly, if I'm being honest, I was going to school to start to get into media and learn all this stuff. And I had just two or three instances of right time, right place, met the right people, said yes to the right thing. And I got very fortunate. We were called BSN Denver at the time, now DNVR, the outlet I'm with now. But yeah, it was just, I sat in, watched a couple of their shows. They actually used the recording studio at the school I was attending because they didn't have their own space at the time. 1 week, their board op was, I actually think he was in Europe for a week or two, and they asked me if I could fill in, and it just
take the opportunity and go from there. Yeah.
Go from there, and it's worked out in ways I mean, we're sitting here in Finland talking, you know, doing this interview, and I can't believe how it's all gone and all that stuff, and getting to cover a Stanley Cup championship run last year. I've been super lucky, super fortunate, but like I said, right time, right place, and you got to say yes to stuff.
And I got to go back. Who was your favorite player then growing up? I mean, those teams were full of Hall of Famers. The first one who got located there, they were a title contender when they came to Denver. Then got Patrick Roy. But you talked about the 2001 team, so you were a little older then. Who was your favorite player growing up?
So with all of those Hall of Famers, I'm probably going to surprise you with this answer. It was Alex Tanguay.
Okay. Well,
scoring two goals in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, getting the winning goal there is not too bad. So
yeah, and he was always a guy that I thought was underappreciated. Really good player. Had a super underrated career as a whole, even after he left Colorado. But he was, for whatever reason, he was my guy. In that 2000, 2001, he was only there for 2 years. I grew up playing defense my whole life, so I loved Ray Bourque, you know, obviously the years he was there, and him as a player just in general. But Alex Tanguay was my guy as a kid, and Like I said, there was 7 Hall of Famers on that roster to pick from, but there was just something about Tange and kind of the, not necessarily underdog, but like I said, kind of unsung hero aspect of it that I just loved about him.
Okay, yeah. So you talked about the Avs having the run to the Stanley Cup last season, and you were there for some of the festivities and some of the things that happened. What was the favorite part for you in all of that? Winning the Cup, the summer, what was the favorite part there?
Ooh, wow, that's a great question.
Or let's say three parts. Let's do the top three.
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, what my favorite part of it was, I was in Tampa, you know, the night they win.
You got to get onto the ice.
Got to go down onto the ice, got to be there on the ice. That was, like, even thinking back, and it was like almost a surreal moment.
Can imagine that.
You know, just like I had to like stop a couple times, like, no, like that's
happening.
Right. That's actually the Stanley Cup being hoisted, you know, like in real time, 5 feet from you. And so
destroyed first, then hoisted, or after that,
yes.
Damaged, yep. Let's not say destroyed.
Yeah, damaged. But then so the hotel the team was staying at was, I don't know if you've ever been to Amalie Arena in Tampa, but it's there's a big courtyard out front, and then there's a JW Marriott. I mean, 100 yards from the front entrance. And so that's where the team was staying. Well, they also have a huge hotel bar there in that lobby. So a bunch of the media, a bunch of people were just back there. And the Avs come in, and they could have come in the back. They came through the lobby, marching. marching the cup through the lobby.
They didn't lose. So.
Didn't lose. Right, exactly. And, I mean, you know, they're all, I mean, these guys are all, you know, 3 sheets to the wind at this point, right? But, you know, just seeing the joy that you can't manufacture, you know, on their faces, and just watching them enjoy that moment with each other. And I actually heard later that they talked about, you know, after when they were celebrating and stuff, that as disappointed as they were to not win it at home, there was a part of it that they actually liked being on the road because it was
them.
It's them.
Yeah.
It's them. And just seeing them go through the lobby, you know, up to their party, and you know, I gained such an appreciation for the work and the sacrifice that goes into getting to that point, you're getting to the NHL, let alone winning the Stanley Cup, that just getting to see the, you know, relief and the joy and the excitement. Pavel Francouz has his necktie tied around his forehead and his, you know, shirt ripped open and all that stuff. If I had to take it down to a moment, I really do. I think that was it. Just the, like I said, you can't fake that type of joy. And so I think watching them come through and then, being on the ice wasn't so bad either.
And then winning the cup is one thing, but then the next season starts and the Avs had a couple of decisions to make. They let players go. Stanley Cup winning goalie Darcy Kuemper was gone, and Burakovsky is gone to Seattle. And then they re-signed a couple of players. What did you think of the moves they made in the summer? Was there one thing you would point out that surprised you of what they did? And was there maybe something that you thought they would do, which they didn't do yet, maybe?
Yeah. So,
Of course, Nazem Kadri left. So
right.
Maybe the biggest one of the three.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that one was probably the least surprising for me. Just after the season he had, you knew that someone was going to pay him.
But when it took longer, did you guys get a feeling, well, this might even work out, he might stay?
So I'll take it a step further. The folks that I talked to, now, disclaimer, this was one of the most, like, tight-lipped, you know, processes that I've been a part of. But after it got settled and he signed in Calgary, a couple of the folks I talked to said that part of the reason it drug on so long was, I think the market just didn't really shake out the way he thought at the beginning. And he kept circling back to Colorado. They wanted to find a way to make it work. But, you know, he told us at the All-Star game in Vegas, look, I've worked my whole career to get this opportunity. So no one was going to give him, you know, a hard time for that. He earned that right, no doubt about it. Not only was it, you know, that we thought maybe it could work, I truly do believe that they wanted to make it work. And that was part of the reason why it took so long. But so there was that. And then the one that surprised me, was probably Darcy Kuemper. I really did. He had a much better season than people gave him credit for in the regular season. Yeah. He struggled in the postseason. Eye injury, I think, hampered him more than he kind of let on. But he had a top five regular season for goaltenders. If you look at the full body of work,
for me, from the outside, Philip Grubauer had a top three season the year before, and then he was just slumping in Seattle. So it kind of looked like there are certain teams that make goalies look good, and the S might be one of them. I think Carolina is one of them as well.
Yep.
So maybe that played into that decision as well.
You're spot on. So what we've just kind of seen with Grubauer and now with Kuemper, the Avs have said, we trust, it's what you and I were talking about before we, you know, started doing this. We trust our, not only our elite D core of defensemen, but our team defense as a whole and our possession numbers, that we don't need elite. We need good enough. And you know, that's
Don't lose the game for us.
Yeah. Don't lose the game for us, and we'll get you there. And so I guess the part of it that surprised me wasn't necessarily that they let him go, but how early in the process they decided, you know, we're cutting the tie and we're bringing in, you know, an unproven guy that we think has some upside.
One of the first moves on the goaltender market that they brought in Georgiev. Yeah.
Yeah. They, you know, they got ahead of the goaltender market. And I guess that was the part that surprised me.
But
more than anything,
if you look at the year before, they were too late probably on the goaltender market. I mean, 100%. You can't claim that, or you can't say that, because they won the cup, so everything worked out. But you had the feeling that, okay, they took Kuemper because and they paid a price for that, because it was too late to do anything else.
Anything short of winning the cup, that looks really bad, right? So they almost kind of get bailed out, because you're spot on. I mean, bailed out, you win the cup, but so I think they were kind of motivated by that. We're not going to do that again, where we have to go overpay for kind of the last, you know, the last guy left. And so I think that was part of it. But just, I remember seeing the when they acquired Georgiev, and I was just like, whoa, I wasn't expecting them to move that quickly on all of it. So that was maybe the one that surprised me. Or at least kind of the way that those events broke down. I guess the other surprise, and I mean, he's had a great start to the season, but it was the 8 years for Val Nichushkin at the number that he got. I thought if they went with the term, it would be a lower dollar figure. But I mean, he got the money and the term. But I mean, he's gotten better every year he's been with the Avs, and they really like him. He has a unique skill set to their team. But like I said, the contract itself was maybe the one part that I was a little like, you know. But they prioritized bringing him back. So I liked their offseason. I kind of liked their approach of, we've got some internal options we can look at. And the one thing I think that we can forget as media, and fans can forget sometimes too, is your roster doesn't have to be final on day one. You know, you can make tweaks. You can see what you've got. Yeah. I think they got a great bargain deal on Evan Rodriguez kind of late in the offseason.
Like that as well,
I thought that what you're paying, and it's just a good upside kind of gamble. You know, people are expecting Alex Newhook to be a, you know, a top six guy today. The dude's 10 games into his second year. You know, he's still working in. You see the flashes. I like that they said, we're not going to overcommit to anything. We're going to kind of see where it falls. And if we need to make moves later down the line, we can. So especially the short off season, I actually really liked what they did, and in the bit of a kind of wait and see approach. And when you win a cup, there's nothing wrong with running it back.
You talked about bargains. The McKinnon deal runs out next summer, so that's something that starts next summer. And they re-signed him as well. Mm-hmm. He might be the highest paid player then, because we don't know who else will get a contract in between. But now in the weeks or months since then, the NHL has said that the salary cap might rise 4 to 4.5 million, whatever it's going to be, even if it's 3 or something like that. Do you have the feeling that McKinnon could have gone higher, because there were rumors that he would go to up to 14.5 million or whatever? And it's not a bargain deal, but I would still say it's team friendly deal, and he wanted to stay in Colorado.
Yeah, it definitely could age into a bargain deal at some point if the cap goes up. based on stuff that Nathan has told us, I think a lot of the talk of the 14, the higher dollar figures, I think that was a lot his agent wanting to get up into that range. The most important thing that McKinnon has made, you know, repeatedly made clear is he wanted to be in Colorado. You know, he idolizes Sidney Crosby. They're from the same town. And I think he wants to follow that model of
stay with one team.
Stay with one team, and this is my team and my core and my group. And I think he wants to do it multiple times, you know, with the same team and you know, kind of have that same legacy, you know, aspect that Crosby's got. And so I think it was a priority for him. Honestly, I think if he was like doing the negotiations himself, he probably would have taken a little bit less, as you know, on the team friendly. But you know, I never expected it to get to the 14. I think he wanted to make sure that he left enough flexibility so that they can stay competitive. He is the most intense person I've ever met. He takes it to a different level. When he says winning is the most important thing, like, I believe him. Like, I believe that he means it.
The first time I was in Denver, there was a practice session, and he threw his stick up into the to the row. So that was a fan pass or whatever, and he was a little angry at himself there. Yeah. And you just talked about being with one team. One of the reasons, this is not hockey, but one of the reasons Dirk Nowitzki is idolized in Germany is also because he stayed in Dallas. He stayed there for his whole career, and that's just something that you don't have that a lot in professional sports anymore, so that's something unique. Sure.
I want to ask you.
You can ask me anything.
Because you just mentioned, you know, Germany and popular players in Germany. So we went through last night and we were talking to some fans here. Who's your favorite player? And obviously we got a ton of Mikko Rantanen and Patrick Laine, but we got several Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar.
It was
surprising because you just assume that it's, you know, the national guys. What kind of status do guys like Makar, MacKinnon, you know, even, you know, obviously like Connor McDavid, guys like that, what type of status do they hold in Germany or just here in Europe in general?
Well, I'm doing a podcast about the NHL in general, but I used to be an Avalanche fan, my favorite player growing up. The thing with me is usually I had favorite players first, then favorite teams. So my favorite player growing up was Joe Sakic. That was how I got into the Avalanche. And regarding Makar and MacKinnon, the feedback I get from my listeners is that if you just watch highlights from Makar or from MacKinnon, you can just, there's nothing else but to be amazed by what they are doing. And I mean, we got Leon Draisaitl now, who is exceeding expectations Germans had in him. I mean, we thought that he might be good. We thought that he might be an elite talent, but you can easily, depending on who you ask, you can easily say he's top 5, top 10 in the league.
Yep, for sure.
And if you watch his playoffs last year, that was amazing as well, even if they lost on one leg. And just Europe is idolizing players just as you guys are in North America. I don't think, I mean, people do care if there's a Finn playing for a certain team. You do care about that, but you do care about hockey, and you do care about skill, and you do care about characters as well. And that is such an important thing that, from my perspective, the NHL has to do more, bring or show the character of players. They are doing that more than 10 years ago, but you should even encourage players even more to show their character. And I think that with a guy like MacKinnon, for example, you see the character on the ice. You see it when you listen to him, when you see him in press conferences, when you saw the press conference after they lost to Vegas, you saw the frustration. You saw everything there. And Nazem Kadri, we talked about Nazem Kadri, you see the passion he has for the game and all the stuff he had to go through. You see that, you saw that when he was on the ice. And I think that European fans, hockey fans in general, are just appreciating that. You don't care where a player is coming from, you just see the level of joy he has. I mean, going back when Ovechkin started to play, I love the enthusiasm, and he still has it when he scores a goal. I don't care if he's Russian or if he's whatever. Trevor Zegras, last season, that goal, that the joy they had on the bench afterwards, when you listen to him when he was at the All-Star game, that's just, it's just pure fun.
It's just fun.
You enjoy that. That's why you watch the games. That's why you come here, and we had about 13,000 people yesterday in this arena, and we're going to have close to 13,000 tonight. Yeah. So that is just. You saw yesterday. I mean, you were surprised when they booed when the Blue Jackets tried to slow the play down.
Yeah,
they want to see skill. They want to see the guys play,
yep.
And that is what they appreciate. And that's when they cheer and when they clap. And so, I think that's not really different to the U.S.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just.
No, and you took the words out of my mouth. It's fun. I was actually telling Mark yesterday. Sports are supposed to be fun, and I think we forget that sometimes because you get so invested, fans get so invested and stuff like that, but it's fun, and I love to see the guys out there having fun, enjoying themselves. And you mentioned 13,000 people in here last night. You and I were getting the elevators and all that stuff, so you and I were starting to head down with about 45 seconds left, whatever, and I just looked out and I took a picture. Even not a single person had left their seats. Just enjoying the moment and the game and all that stuff, and that was, it was just so cool to see the way that they were. I guess I don't know if appreciating is the right word, but it just you don't see that again back home. Fans take it for granted; they get up and leave. 10 minutes left or whatever. And
I don't want to blame them, because if you have a season ticket, if you've got 41 games each year and you see the team, you see the preseason games or whatever, you get a chance to see them twice a week during the regular season, pretty much. So you when you play the Arizona Coyotes and it's 5-1, you might leave early.
Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, so, but, yeah, like you said, that's the fans here. I know it's hard for American teams or North American teams to come over, but fans here are just thirsty for NHL hockey.
Yeah.
It's the top. I mean, we have that in soccer. In soccer, in Europe, you have the top-notch talent.
Yep.
So we are blessed in soccer to have that. And in different sports, it's different. The NBA, when they come here, the NHL, when they come here. I mean, NFL now, they have more regular season games here. I think there's going to be the first one in Germany in about a week in Munich. Yeah, they have one in Munich. Buccaneers are coming. So I don't know the second
Tom
team
Brady,
right now. But they are appreciating that. They are getting used. I mean, the world is globalized.
Yeah.
We've got Finnish players playing in the NHL, so the Finnish people want the NHL to come here as well. German players, the same thing. We had the games in Berlin when they played their German team. Then they had one in Switzerland. Then they had those two in Prague. So Europe is watching. And it's also the same thing when they have the Saturday and Sunday schedule for Europe. They just released that before the season, where you have games on Saturday and Sunday, which are early in North America.
Yep.
But for us, it's prime time.
Prime time.
So those games, we appreciate that. We appreciate the first round of the playoffs, where you have the pretty early schedule. So that is nice as well. And later on, it's just a grind for hockey fans here. So they are happy to see the team live.
Yep.
Prime time, that's just, you will never leave. Why leave? And I mean, especially last night, you got a Finnish player scoring a hat trick.
Yeah.
I mean, the once in a lifetime you're gonna see that. So
can't script that.
No,
can't script it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I took us on a total diatribe there.
You can take it wherever you want to. It's just fun. I mean, not only that, that's the same thing for me. It's fun covering the league, and it's for me. I appreciate what I got of coverage or what opportunities I get here to cover the team. I mean, you guys, okay, we didn't get into the locker room yesterday, but we got the players. You got the players. And no one really cares about what TV station you are from or what podcast you are from. In Germany, I've covered soccer games, and then you have the TV station first, they get their answers. Then you have the second TV station, they get their answers. And once they are finished, the players will walk.
Yeah.
Because why stop for someone from a podcast who got I don't know how many listeners? So that's something I appreciate as well with the NHL. And from Europe, from my point of view, just to add to that,
yeah,
I was in North America a couple of times, and I got credentials there as well, and they appreciated me coming over, and they made the schedule when you have German players. I was in Anaheim, Corbinian Holzer was playing there, yeah, who was a German player. So I was talking to Philip Grubauer in Denver. So they made sure that as a German coming over, you get to cover your players. And that's just, I think that's something the NHL has done a good job in getting, yeah, also embracing the new media, kind of, you guys with your channel, with podcasts as well.
Yeah.
I think they've started that pretty early, and they've done a good job there. So
yeah
that's really cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And this has just been, it's been just so interesting seeing it from this point. And I also gained a lot of appreciation for what you're talking about, the late night games and stuff. I was wanting to, like, we got back to the hotel the other night, and I was like, oh, I'll see, you know, see, yeah, if I can find a game to watch. I was like, oh, they don't all start till 1 or 2 a.m., and those are, like, the early games. Those are the East Coast games.
So the playoffs are a grind. I think the finals, I think the games, all of them started at 2 in the morning in Germany. So I selected, so I didn't watch all of them. That's the cool thing. Now you can watch them later.
On demand.
You can record them on demand. Yeah, that was what I was searching for.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's not easy to not get the results. So I turned my phone off, and then I woke up at 6 in the morning so I could watch the game compromised before the kids woke up.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was hard to not turn on your phone and get the results. So, but yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And we'll never change that, but it's great that they were finally able to come back here and we got some games here. So obviously we would love to have a regular season game back in Germany soon, but I understand that. I mean, we got the quotes from the players, how hard it is to get through the jet lag and stuff like that. And they have a 5-day or 6-day break before the first game, then they have another 5-day or 6-day break after the second game. So it is something that hurts your schedule, your rhythm. And so I get why they don't do that more often with more teams.
Yeah. Well, so we heard Jared Bednar talk about that yesterday with the consistency and these guys, they want to be on the ice. And he even mentioned, you know, Cale Makar has kind of gotten off to a slow start. Yeah. He likes to be on the ice. He likes to have his routine. So, it's, I'd love for them to maybe even find a way where you're out here for 2 weeks, maybe play more than two games or something like that. Let the guys acclimate a bit, but
bring four teams at the beginning of the season, make a little like tournament, let them play each other. I get that you have your season ticket holders is home at home as well, so you got to make sure that they get there.
They get enough.
40. it's always money.
So yeah.
I don't know how the money is spread from those venues here, but I think it's always money we're talking about. So
And again, sorry, we can go back. We were talking about the Avs offseason and just kind of moves they were making and stuff. But
you made a good point about being consistent. The Avs are pretty inconsistent so far.
Yep.
Yesterday was pretty much a microcosm of their season. They have a great first period. They got a 3-0 lead. Everything works.
Yep.
And then they kind of stop playing and let the Blue Jackets back into the game, and then they show their greatness again in the third period.
Yep.
What is it that they are missing right now, and why does it seem to be so hard for them to just focus, it in quotes just, but focus on playing consistent hockey?
So it's been really interesting, because this is now two seasons in a row where they've started, you know, because they've
looked at the Lightning. Might that be something that where they say, okay, we're good enough for that, we can start slow?
So I think that played a big role last year, because if you go back to the year where they got knocked out against Vegas, they just go back and listen to some of those interviews coming down the stretch, whether it be with Jared Bednar or any of the players, they talked a lot. We want to get first. Right. We want to win the President's Trophy. We want to have home ice. And I think they kind of burned themselves out a bit. So it seemed to me last year they did learn that lesson a little bit of, you don't have to, you know, kill yourself trying to, you know, get seeding or whatever. Yeah. You know, you have to be peaking at the right time. And the irony in that is they ended up running away with the Western Conference. But, you know, they I think they have just kind of realized a little bit of what you're saying. find the time to get in your groove and figure out what works for you best, and you don't have to live and die on every win and or loss. But I don't know, you don't want to make excuses. I think there is genuinely a part of it that their schedule to start the season has been a little bit sporadic. They've after tonight, they will have played four sets of back-to-backs through their first 11 games. So I think there is a little bit...
Started with a back-to-back.
Crazy. Home, then on the road, which I thought was really weird. So they had to travel the night of their home opener. Late start, super emotional, banner raising, all that stuff. So, look, I say it all the time. I'm not trying to make excuses. I try to give context. And that is the reality of their situation. So I think that's a little bit of a part of it. Guys aren't quite in the rhythm yet. And then I think there's just... I'm not saying the injuries, every team deals with injuries, but I think there's kind of been more new faces to start the season than maybe they anticipated. Even a guy like Arturi Lehkonen, obviously he comes in at the trade deadline, plays a huge role in the playoffs, but you're at the end of the season, you're kind of peaking. Everyone is just, you're running a bit on instinct. So, you're trying to incorporate him in a little bit more of a full role. You're adding in Evan Rodriguez. You're trying to see what you got in Alex Newhook, where he's at. And then, literally their entire fourth line right now are all AHL call-up guys. So I think there's just been a little bit more of an adjustment than I think if you gave them all truth serum, what they would tell you is, I think they thought it would just be a little bit more pick up right where we left off. And there's just been a little bit more transition. And that's why you see the flashes of the greatness. I mean, Columbus ties that game up last night and it's just, bang, bang, two pucks in the back of the net. They're right back in the lead and kind of, back in control of the game. So you see it, it's there. And that's why I don't think anyone in that locker room is worried about it. I watch them and you say they'll get back on track, but I think it's been a combination of a few things, but I do think if everyone's being a little honest with themselves, I think they were like, let's jump right back into it. No big deal.
Nate talked about it yesterday. They have been great for 3 or 4 years, and they know that they can get back to their top level, so they are pretty confident there. You talked about them playing guys from the AHL, and one of the reasons is that they have some injuries. How surprised were you that Gabriel Landeskog had to do the surgery again after he did that last year to be ready for the playoffs, and now he has to do that, I don't know if the same surgery, but another surgery in that area again? Yep. How surprised were you?
Very, very honestly. It was something that we were told was... they were cleaning it up, and
he didn't really practice during the playoffs, from what I've heard.
Yep, I think it was one at the start of the final, before I think it was the day before game one.
They had a break. They swept the Oilers. Pretty big break.
And then I think he took one more earlier in the playoffs, maybe in that first round. But other than that, no morning skates, no practices, none of that. So we really did kind of assume, he's playing. And, he played at full speed. He was full go in the games. So I think we just all kind of thought, he came back a little early. He'll take, 2 months off, rehab it nice and be good to go. And honestly, Jared Bednar told us that was kind of what they thought too. But once the team got back to Denver and started doing the captain skates and, unofficial practices, I guess it started bothering him quite a bit. So it was unexpected. And then I don't want to use the word floored. That feels dramatic. But I was very surprised when Jared Bednar started off the press conference saying, another surgery,
three months.
Yeah. I really did it. When they won the cup, I thought, cool, he's going to take two and a half months off and we'll be, he'll be good to go at the start of the season. But, just not the case. So that was really surprising. Then Darren Helm was another one who, Bednar told us that it was originally quoted a 12-week recovery. We're into week 16 or 17 right now. So both of those injuries.
And he mentioned 2 days ago he's not on the horizon. He might be better, but not on the horizon. So that would probably be another month at least.
At least. And I've had some people on Twitter be like, oh, Darren Helm, he's a fourth line guy. It's like, that's a NHL veteran who, you know, is a reliable guy. He's a penalty killer, you know, plays heavy minutes, defensive minutes.
That's what Bednar just said after the morning skate, that the problem might not be with the minutes, might not only be that you have to play more 5-on-5, but you have to play both penalty kill and both power play, and so you don't have your role players who might be fourth liners, but who play a couple of minutes in the penalty kill, and the guy who now has to do double shifts there gets some rest there. Yeah,
get some rest. Right, exactly. And you're missing out on that, and you've got, you know, a lot of your top guys out there blocking, you know, having to block shots and things like that. It's just, it's harder on your body, and that's something where I think maybe, you know, a guy like Darren Helm and Andrew Cogliano, for sure, you know, maybe can go a little, you know, unnoticed in a lot of the stuff that they do. But that's the big thing. You know, I talked to Jared Bednar and the Colorado Eagles, you know, the AHL team, their head coach Greg Cronin, in the offseason, and they said not only are you looking for consistency out of those young guys, but you're looking for reliability. Can I put them out there if we're protecting a one goal lead with 2 minutes left, whatever, you know, whatever the situation may be? And that's where you really miss a guy like Darren Helm, where, yes, that's his role. Go out there and shut this thing down.
There's a reason why he scored that last second winner against St. Louis, because he was out there.
Right.
Yeah.
He was out there. He was trusted. Jared Bednar said, I feel confident that if I'm going to put him out there, we're not going to lose this game before overtime. And then, to your point, he ends up scoring a – that's another one from that playoff run that I'll remember forever. You know, where the press box was situated, it was, I mean, it happened like right in front of us, and just, but you're right, you know, and that's where they're missing it. And you have to shorten up the minutes for those fourth line guys, because, gosh, I don't want Mikhail Maltsev out there, you know, if we get stuck on an icing or whatever, and it's just harder minutes. So, I think both those injuries have maybe had a bigger impact to start this season than not only we were anticipating, but I think the team as well.
Do you think, if they still struggle, let's say in 1 month, they're still playing 500 hockey, do you think that they will move something to try to get better there? I think the original plan was to get as much cap space up until the trade deadline and then work from there, maybe trade for a 2C, something that is supposed to be the case. But do you think that they might do something if they are still missing those guys in a month? Or is just two games against Columbus, winning those and then getting the start, that might be the medicine the doctor ordered?
Jump start it. So here's a rule of thumb we were told, I believe this is two seasons ago now, by Jared Bednar. They want 12 points out of every 10 games. If they can pull 12 points out of every 10 game chunk, they like where they're at. Okay. So that would kind of be how I'd answer that if they are in that range, if they're picking up 11 to 13 points in every 10 game chunk, I don't think they'll do anything. I think they're just going to say, we're going to ride it out and hope that hope that Alex Newhook can kind of keep getting better, or Evan Rodriguez as he gets more comfortable, you know, whoever your kind of, you know, fixed situation is. And we haven't even mentioned Val Nichushkin has now missed a few games in a row. But, you know, I think if they're in that range, I think they're going to try to stick to the plan. The one thing we've learned with Joe Sakic is he is patient. He will wait for what he wants. He's not going to make any rash decisions. But if they aren't hitting that mark and it continues to be, like you said, kind of a microcosm of what we saw yesterday, where it's just you plug one hole and another one springs loose, I wouldn't be fully surprised at some type of shakeup. Can we get a fresh body in here that you know is a little bit more energized, isn't kind of going through this grind, that'll be excited to be with, you know, a team like this? I wouldn't be surprised at all. But like I said, if they're sticking in that right about that range, like I said, 12 points every 10 games, if they can be in there, I think they'll stay the course.
You talk about what the Avs want. We chatted a bit before we started the recording. Who might be players the Avs are targeting? Do you have someone in mind? I mean, Patrick Kane is the obvious one, who was mentioned last season as well. Are there other candidates you have in mind?
So, yes, but I'll be honest. Patrick Kane is the one that not only do I think would be a fit for what they want to do. I don't think they'd want to re-sign him. I think it's we've got one more year on this MacKinnon bargain, which, I mean, they could re-sign him.
It depends on what he wants. I mean, he's earned his money. Maybe if he likes it, they win another cup. He wins another cup if he likes it. But that's for the future, but yeah, for now it would be great addition.
Yep. And I've talked to a few folks who have said they really like him. I have confirmed they've called on him,
but he's not a C, so they would have to shuffle things there as well.
Yep. So and that is kind of where the problem
it makes it a little lies, problematic. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't really solve your root issue. I mean, could you have Mikko Rantanen fill in spot duty there? Sure. Could you have Gabe Landeskog help out? He does some of that, those responsibilities. Sure, but that's not really a hard solution there. So I know they really like Patrick Kane. We have an outlet in Chicago called CHGO, and they've heard a lot of the same things that Joe Sakic has made it known. Is it Kyle Davidson? That's the new Chicago GM. Like, hey, when he's ready to go, please call us.
The good thing is, like Giroux last season, he can select pretty exactly much where he wants to go. I saw someone who said, yeah, it's going to be a bidding war. And I said, why will it be a bidding war? Because he can limit the number of teams he wants to go to.
Yep.
And if he says, like Giroux did, I want to go to Florida or whatever, okay, you got to pretty much accept what they are offering you.
Yep, and Joe Sakic told us that, actually, just real quick on the Claude Giroux thing. He said, we were never really in it. We let him know we're interested, but they were pretty upfront saying, he wants to go to Florida, yeah. But to your point, that could be one of those things. If Patrick Kane's like, I want to go play on Nathan MacKinnon's wing,
Why not?
Right, that's their only option. But the other one that, I can't believe I'm actually even saying this, given the way his last couple seasons have gone, but the way that Jonathan Toews has started this year, how are you not looking at that saying, gosh, that would be a great fit as a second line center.
Center.
And
that's the key there, yeah.
Right, and you could put, the top line that just worked wonders for the Avs in the final was Nichushkin, MacKinnon, Landeskog. So, that means you'd put Mikko Rantanen and, Arturi Lehkonen on the wings for Jonathan Toews, and it's like...
Well, the ripple effect, not only those two lines, but the ripple effect down. Yep. The guys you're putting down, you have a way better third line, you have a way better fourth line there. If Helm returns, you're going to get injuries during the season as well, so let's see what happens with Nichushkin there.
Yeah.
It
bumps everyone down, and now you have Alex Newhook, back in that 3C role. But I think that's good for him. People make me laugh, they need to develop him. It's like, what you're seeing is development. Yeah. You can't rush these guys and give them too much. There's so much about hockey that's it's mental, it's confidence, it's wanting the puck on your stick. And if it takes you a little bit to work in Alex Newhook, again, he's a young kid, he's 21 years old, and if you can give him maybe a slightly elevated third line role, maybe a couple extra minutes than he was getting last year, and he can slide up on the wing to the top six and stuff like that, I just think that a move like that would put them, I think they are still contenders when at fully healthy, but a move like that, I think just takes them right back to really kind of where they were last year. And Chicago is going to be willing to eat half of those deals because they're trying to get anything they can. And
the Avs have their first round pick next season. Yeah.
Yep. So they,
that's one thing.
Joe Sakic made a point to not give up that 2023 first, because it's a deep draft. They know it holds a lot of value, and he wanted it as a bargaining chip this year. Sure. So, they've got some assets, and if you have to run, a third team into this to eat a little bit more salary. I loved the draft this last year. The Avs had a sixth and seventh round pick. It was like the easiest draft I've ever had to work. I'm sitting here, I'm like, just trade them. Just trade them all.
The same thing what Tampa did. Why care? You have your title window wide open. Why care?
Right.
I think more in than anywhere else in Denver, people now understand it was hard. Mm-hmm. The seasons they had, they were hard, but now you're getting the results, and that's just amazing. That's an amazing team to root for, and having two or three seasons of a rebuild, why not?
And the other thing too, Gabe Landeskog is like the elder statesman of this core, and he's not even 30 yet. Yeah. Eric Johnson, I know, but he's 1 year left on his deal. He's near the end of his career. Great
aging
guy.
Out.
Right. he's been a great av and all that stuff, but you know, this core that is locked up for multiple years, they're all, you know, Nathan McKinnon's 27. Like, you're not that you don't need draft picks. You always need guys in your pipeline and stuff like that. But I'm 100% with you. It's why care about that right now? If you can go add two more cups in the next 5-6 years with this core on, you know, on these contracts and stuff, who cares about the first round picks that you've traded? That's you're in the mode now where this whole game is about championships. You're trying to win. Trying to win championships, you're trying to hang banners.
Trying to give you a chance to win the championship. I mean, one out of 32 teams wins the championship, yeah. So that's not a guarantee, but just give your team a chance to win it.
A chance, exactly. And if that's what you feel gives your team the best chance to win, do it. Do it. And so, you know, if you've got to run another team in there to eat, you know, in Arizona, to eat a little bit of salary, you got to throw them a third, fourth round pick, fifth round pick, whatever, to take a little bit to make the money work. Yeah. Great. Cool. Yeah. So I'm looking at Chicago as a team that I think the Avs are going to try to dance with, come trade deadline. Yeah. You know, I'm sure there's a couple other players out there, but what I've heard from the people I've talked around to, that's kind of where they're, focus is.
And one thing you just mentioned a couple minutes ago is also character. You know, when you talk about Kane and Tace, you know what you're getting. You know what you're getting, a leader. You're getting a proven winner.
Yep.
That's also something. So that might be also something they're looking for in them.
And they understand the mentality of what it takes to get through that grind. That was something that I think Nathan McKinnon was on the 32 Thoughts podcast, I think, this summer. And he was laughing because he said, you know, we used to get into these playoff runs and, you know, we tell each other, this is our year, we're going to do it. He said, now actually having gone through it, like we weren't ready in those years before. Yeah. Like we thought we were, but we weren't. What a mental grind it is and what a physical grind it is and how you have to stay mentally sharp and take care of your body while continuing to ramp up the intensity every single day. And, you know, bringing in guys like that who can jump right into that and say, yeah, we've been here, we've done that, we know what it takes to get there multiple times. Yeah. I think that's something that they're going to try to prioritize when looking to add. So, you know, there's going to be plenty of names that come up near trade deadline. Yeah. But as of right now, if you were forced me to put money on it, I'd say it's one of those two.
You mentioned Alex Newhook a couple of times. If Avalanche fans want to focus on one player who's not one of the established superstars, who would be that player you would advise them to just take a look in the games?
Yep. So Newhook is one. I really like his skill. I love his upside. I think he's got great. He does a lot of the things well that this team likes to do. You know, he can skate, he can shoot, he's got great vision. So he's one, but the one for me that I say not quite established, we talked about him a little bit last night, is Bowen Byram. He's special. He's got that, I hate using the word swagger, I think it's so overused in sports, but he's
got character.
Yes. He's got that confidence, and for a 21-year-old kid... To carry himself the way he does and you know, no fear, and, you know, he we were saying, you know, you want guys to want the puck on their stick. He wants the puck on his stick. And you know, he's not afraid to jump in and hit guys and you know, mix it up with big-name players in the league. He's got a physical edge to his game that maybe people wouldn't expect from a defenseman that can skate and shoot as well as he can. So he's the guy, again, I heard – someone talking about that they had a couple conversations with some GMs in the off season, and that there was two GMs that, in, you know, paraphrasing here, that said that the performance that the people around the league saw out of Bowen Byram in the final was like worst case scenario. Yeah. You're like, they found another one of these guys. Yeah. There's two of these guys out here.
And the one thing I wanted to add, or two things I wanted to add to that, is he's healthy.
Yep.
And he seems to be, one thing we talked about, having fun. Mm-hmm. Outside. on the rink. He's having fun playing hockey. And that there was, I think it was Peter Bowe who had an article about Bo Byram's summer, the dark side of his concussion and stuff like that. And he seems to be over that right now. And he seems to be just enjoying it and having fun. And that's, we talked about that with the fans. That's also something the fans connect to.
Yeah. He's got a smile on his face, you know, every shift he's out there. And, you know, he does. He seems like a really good kid, you know, from the bit that we get to know him and stuff. But he's the one that I really do think has potential to be truly special, you know, from this group that isn't already established. And you're looking back at that draft where they, you know, that's a draft pick they got in the Matt Duchene trade, yeah. Continues to bear fruit for them.
And people thought that, oh man, they didn't get the number one pick, they just got the number four pick there. So
and it worked out. And you know, I know a guy that they liked was Kirby Dach, and so when Chicago took him, you know, they weren't originally wanting to target another defenseman because, you know, they had so many at that point. But I think it's worked out in the best way possible for them. And he really does, to me, have the potential to be a star.
As the Zamboni is coming out again here, just to probably wrap it up, we've talked about fans in Europe idolizing players in North America. What is your view on German players? We've had Moritz Seider, kind of not really the same like Byron, but he's also got attitude. He's a guy who's got character. Yep. What do you think of him, and what do you think of the German players that came into the league in the last couple of years?
Yeah, so it's been really interesting to watch. I was talking with a guy who does some work with USA Hockey, and they've been putting a lot of time and attention into what some of these countries like Finland and Germany are doing, because much smaller nations, you know, population-wise, and yet they're turning out this elite talent more regularly. Mo Seider, I mean, I don't know if I wouldn't say not quite like Byram, because he's another one. I mean, physical, skate, can shoot.
He doesn't care. The first, I don't know, was the first or second game they played against Tampa, and he just, he screamed with the other guys, and he was in a scrum there.
And yeah, not afraid to mix it up. So I actually, and, you know, growing up, you know, in Colorado watching the Avs, you know, saying anything nice about, you know, Red Wing stuff, still like at my core. Is, you know, I still just like, I can't get myself there. But, you know, all jokes aside, I loved watching Mo Seider last year. I thought he was a ton of fun to watch. Leon Draisaitl, I mean, he played that entire Western Conference final on one foot, basically.
And he had like 2 points a game.
2 points a game, and was still not just a production, but just like incredibly effective out there. And I mean, there was a few times where he took a hit or went down or something, and I said, no way, he's coming back. You know, I mean, dragging himself to the bench, going down the tunnel,
limping. Like, oh, my leg, on next shift.
And then doesn't miss a shift. And it was unbelievable to watch. And so it really has been, I've been a big World Junior guy. I missed it. I didn't watch it much this year, just with it being in the summer and all that stuff. But it's been so interesting to see, and I think you and I talked about it a couple days ago, nations like Germany and, you know, Finland used to be role players, good role players, you know, solid NHL guys, had good NHL careers, and it's just been so fun to watch the elite talent emerge from these, you know, smaller European countries over here that are stars. They're superstars. You know, they're like you said, Leon Draisaitl, depending on, you know, how you feel about his defensive game, you know, he's a top 5 to top 10 player in the league. And I mean, his vision, he may be the best passer in the league, and his shot is ridiculous, and it's not, they're not turning out role players anymore. They're turning out big name, big production goal scorers. You know, Mo Seider is, I think he's going to be special, you know, in the NHL.
With kind of his slumping right now, I think.
Not
too many points.
Too many points. Second season's always the toughest, getting through the scouting reports and stuff like that for the first time. But that, to me, has kind of been the thing that I've noticed going back. And you see it coming with the World Juniors. You know, you kind of see it a couple of years in advance, right? Where, these teams aren't, they're not cakewalks anymore. They're not, you know, it's not just U.S. and Canada and Sweden and you know, Russia blowing everyone out and then getting down to those four.
It's harder. They might still win or win most of the times, but it's harder. It's getting harder.
It's harder. They're good games, and it seems like every year you see what, you know, and again, using quotes, an upset where, you know, Germany knocks off a Canada or a Russia or a U.S. or something like that, and, you know, how many times has Finland won the World Juniors now in the last 10 years? And that's been the part that's been, I think, the most interesting for me, is just to see that it's not just good hockey players anymore that are coming out of, you know, Germany. It's great hockey players. And then all the good hockey players are still there. You know, all the good role guys are still coming up through, but there are the ones that are kind of emerging and, you know, kind of taking this full circle to, you know, where we're sitting right now. And Mikko Rantanen talked about it yesterday. And Alex Newhook touched on it a little bit this morning, you know, being from Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. Saying, I remember the first time, you know, Alex Newhook was saying that, I remember the first time I went to an NHL game and saying, that's possible for me. Yeah. And it's just awesome to see, because, you know, there are young German hockey players that are looking at a guy like Leon Draisaitl and saying, I can do that. That's realistic for me. You know, I don't have to become a fighter to make it to the NHL. I can be a skilled forward. I can be a goal scorer. I can be a top, you know, skating defenseman and make it to the NHL. And I just think I think you're going to only see more and more and more. And best on best, Canada, I think, still has a stranglehold for a while. Sure. But I think that gap is shrinking. And in 10 years, I think it's going to be even smaller than it is now. And it's led a lot by guys like we've named off here. And you know, having Mikko Rantanen and Patrick Laine, you know, playing games in these buildings and stuff like that. I think you're going to see more and more of it. And I love it. I have never been someone to gatekeep hockey at all. I want as many people watching and enjoying and celebrating hockey as possible, because I think it's the best game in the world. I think it's unbelievable to watch live and in person, and, you know, the speed and the pace that it's all played at. And that's what I want. If in 10 years we have a best on best, an Olympics or a World Cup or something like that, and it's Germany, Finland in the final, like, that's my ideal, because that means that
there's a reason why they're there.
It's just more elite hockey, and that's what I love. So
the final question now: when we look at the NHL, and especially at the Western Conference going back to this season, who do you think will be the best teams there besides the Avs, the contenders that they have to go through to repeat there?
Yeah, so I think the Avs, once they settle in, I think they'll be up there. You want to say Calgary, right? Yeah. There's just something there that doesn't feel right to me. There was a lot of big money given out, a lot of long-term deals before anybody even played a game.
Lost some edge.
Yep. And so you want to say them, but for me, jury's still out a little bit. And the one that I think people have written off a bit, and they've kind of pushed back at the start of the season, is Vegas.
Of course, yeah.
You know, the wheels came off completely last year. Everything that could have gone wrong
was constructed. That was what they wanted to do, pretty much. They wanted to have guys on the injury list, and it didn't work out. They didn't get healthy enough.
So. Yep, just kind of blew up in their face a little bit, and not to be like too harsh, but it just didn't kind of come together. And I think people saw, like, oh, they're a bad team now. What else? And now they had to make some sacrificial moves in the offseason. I don't think they're as good of a team, but you still got Jack Eichel. You got Mark Stone.
Stone healthy.
You got Alex Pietrangelo. Jonathan Marchessault. I think that's going to be a team that, it's crazy to say, is going to surprise people, because if you rewind the clocks a year, that's like a no-brainer, right? But
goaltending. The key is goaltending. If 100%. It holds up, if Logan Thompson can have a rookie of the year season like that.
If he can be above average, he doesn't need to be great. Yeah. I think that's going to be a really good team, especially in a kind of vulnerable Pacific division. I'm becoming kind of famous for I've been burned on believing in the Oilers being good too many times that I can't get myself there anymore. I'm like, they've let me down so many times. So when you've got guys like McDavid and Draisaitl, you're always going to be in games. But for me, it really is right now, on whatever it is, November 5th, it's Colorado, it's Calgary, and it's Vegas, I think, are the three teams that I'm looking at saying those are going to be the elite teams. Throw Edmonton in there if you want, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, with the Oilers, I always say that they are missing the kind of defense the other teams have. They are missing someone who's an elite defender. Yes. They gave out a number one defenseman contract, but I don't think Nurse is that kind of player. He's not. If you compare the contracts, I mean, we saw Werenski yesterday, and that's one thing I always say. You shouldn't compare contracts from different teams, because the Werenski contract works out for Columbus because they kept an elite player there. Right. But he's earning more money than Makar. Nurse is only earning more money than Makar. Seth Jones as well. They are not better than Cale Makar.
Right.
But some of the contracts still make sense. But I think the Darnell Nurse is too high, and they are missing one elite defenseman there.
And here's my other... Them and Toronto... These are really big years for both those teams. Really yeah. important years for both those teams. And they took such big gambles in net. Such big gambles in net. I like Jack Campbell. I remember clear as day watching his team win the World Juniors. And he was great. Yeah. He had half of a really good season with Toronto.
Yeah.
And suddenly everyone was like, oh, he's a top-tier number one. And it's like, yeah. ooh, I don't know about that. He kind of fell apart last year in Toronto. To your point, they're missing that top-end defense in Edmonton, and I just think he needs to be insulated a little bit more. And their issue last year was, especially in that series against the Avs, they couldn't outscore their yeah. problems. They couldn't, as much as McDavid and Draisaitl tried, you know, they lost two games in the Western Conference Final where they scored five or more goals. Yeah. And that's a problem. And I just don't think they address that part of the problem for them. And really, you go back to that round one, I mean, they barely made yeah. it out of the first round.
McDavid had to turn on the afterburner there yep, to get them through.
To get them there. And so, you know, I'm with you. I think they're missing that kind of top defenseman. So I think they'll be there standings-wise. But to me, I still just think they're missing a little too much Edmonton, you know, to really be up there with, like, yeah. the, in my opinion, the true, true contenders. But it doesn't mean they're not a fun team to watch.
Oh, yeah. They sure are. And it was fun to talk to you, Jesse. Super. Thanks a lot for taking the time. It's been fun to talk to you guys the last couple of days. So thanks a lot, DNVR Avalanche. I will yep. link your shows, your sites as well. And it's always a pleasure to talk to someone who covers the game, not the game, the teams daily on a daily basis, who's got the insights. So thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Yeah, no, Lars, seriously, thank you so much. This whole week has been a blast, and doing stuff like this is for me what all this is about. I love this kind of stuff. So anytime, and we'd love to have you on our show at some point. Sure. It's been a pleasure chatting with you and getting to know you here the last couple days.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. Bye, guys.